permit, we came.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left.
Who are you?
Explorers in the further regions of experience. Demons to some, angels to others.
Call him Meatloaf.
Hello and welcome to How I Met Your Monster, the show where we discuss the introductions to your favorite movie monsters. I'm Zach.
And I'm Casey.
And wow, funny games.
Funny games. Haha.
Not funny.
Oh, it's funny.
Was it?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Spoiler alert. They lost.
Yeah.
I don't remember their fucking name. Their family name. Their name. Their last name.
Their family name. Their last name is Farber.
Yeah, the Farbers lost.
Mm-hmm.
Suckers.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, watch it before you listen to this. Probably don't watch it if you have kids. But other than that, don't watch it with your kids.
I was going to say, you can watch it if you have kids, but maybe not with your kids. Although, most of the violence is off screen. I think it's fine for kids.
Yeah, and that is an interesting thing, is that all of the violence is off screen.
Besides one thing.
Okay, so all of the violence except one quick moment is off screen. All of the violence to the family is off screen.
Big bummer.
Was it? You were bummed by that? Big bummer.
Yeah, I felt a little bit attacked by this movie because I know that it's coming at me.
It's coming at you?
People like me are the reason that this man made this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Consumers of violence.
Yep. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for our listeners out there, we are recording this. I am recording this in Oklahoma. Casey's in Pittsburgh. But in Oklahoma right now, we are in the middle of a severe thunderstorm warning with a tornado watch because it is tornado season in Oklahoma. So if you hear rain in the background, that's what it is. If you hear a little thunder crack, it's probably Bruce Springsteen.
Thundercrack. Baby's back.
Well, before we get into funny games and before we meet our monsters, Paul and Peter, did you watch anything else this week?
No.
No? I watched last night, actually, I watched The Pit and the Pendulum.
Oh.
It was Full Moon Features, and it was from Stuart Gordon, who made Reanimator and From Beyond.
Oh.
It's got Lance Henriksen, and it's about the Spanish Inquisition. And about yeah.
Okay.
It's an Edgar Allan Poe story.
And okay, that's why it sounded familiar.
Yeah. And it's all about he's the Grand Inquisitor or something. Okay. And it's all about this, you know, if the people are witches or if they're what did they call them? Heretics?
Yes.
What's a heretic?
So a heretic is a person believing in or practicing religious heresy, which is belief or opinion that's contrary to orthodox religious doctrine.
Okay. So that was that's kind of the whole thing of the Spanish Inquisition, right? They were targeting people who didn't. It was I don't know if it was the Catholic Church or something. They were targeting the people who didn't follow along with their rules.
Exactly.
And so, it was all about that. And it focuses on this one lady who this Grand Inquisitor says she's a witch. And she's I'm not a witch. And they do all this stuff, but she kind of is a witch. I don't know. But it's the Pit and the Pendulum because he makes this contraption where he ties people down. Mm-hmm. I think he this was the first time he was using it. And so he did it on this one guy and he ties him down and there's a pit of spikes underneath him. And then from the top is this swinging a pendulum, a swinging axe blade.
Wow.
That just keeps getting lower and lower and lower. And he while that's going down, he releases rats on him and they're nibbling on the guy. And then,
oh my God.
So
was it violent?
Parts of it. Yeah.
Cool.
I wouldn't say it was. I mean, Stuart Gordon makes amazing movies or made amazing movies. Yeah. He has passed on just in 2020. I don't know if that was a COVID thing or not. He died in March of 2020, but this was not one of his best.
Oh, well, it sounds fucking cool.
Yeah. The idea is kind of cool. Yeah. Charles Band, who is the, who like started Full Moon Features. I know that he inherited like a castle. And so a lot of the Full Moon Features you'll see like in said castle,
same
because
castle,
they just used it for like all these different things.
That's fucking awesome.
And so I think part of it was, I think most of it was filmed in there because it's very castle like.
Yeah.
But it's funny to see like it's got Jeffrey Combs in it, who is Herbert West in Reanimator.
Okay.
And he's got like, he's like the, he like works for the Grand Inquisitor. So he's like a, I don't know, he always carries around a book and he like writes things in it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It takes place in like the 1400s or something. So he's got like these, this like, it's not like a dress, but robes. It's like this. No, it's not a, it's not robes. It's like he wears this little hat. His hair is like bowl cut with like, and then like,
oh my God,
right at the shoulders.
Yeah.
And he wears these glasses and he's got this like, it's like a jumpsuit sort of, but the legs get really big at one point. And then at the knees, they're like, it like tightens up and he just has like these little black tights on. It's so funny.
That sounds great.
Oh my God. It is hysterical.
Imagine the upkeep of owning a castle.
Right?
Wow. I was thinking I would love to have a castle, but then like, God.
Dusting that place?
I don't even, you know, I mean, I spend all week cleaning my fucking 1,200 square foot house. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, that's probably why there's a lot of cobwebs.
Yeah.
A lot of drafts, a lot of place for bugs to get in. They just set up shop and you'd have to have like at least a 3-person staff to keep that place clean. At least 3 people.
Yeah. I don't want a castle anymore. Okay.
No. All right. Well, since you didn't watch anything and that's all I watched, now it's time to meet our monster.
Let's do it.
Okay, so today we have two monsters on our docket. Peter and Paul. Paul and Peter.
Which are not their real names.
What do you think their real names are? Tom and Jerry?
Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah, could be. Could be
no,
Tubby
they,
and...
No, they... what, they look like a Chad. I don't know.
Which one looks Jeff? Like Chad?
I don't know. They look like Zach and Danny.
So our monsters are Paul and Peter, played by Michael Pitt and Brady Corbett, respectively. Sort of like the lead monster would be Paul. He's like the alpha of the two.
Yeah, for sure. The other one's a little bit, honestly, the Peter seems a little bit like he's on the spectrum. Like he came off a little bit like he was maybe a little autistic or something like that to me.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
I could see that in his character.
Yeah. And then I think that Paul was kind of, you know, taking advantage of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, actually, from what I read, Paul and Peter were loosely based on two real people from the 20s, teenagers, actually. Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb.
Ah, Leopold and Loeb.
Yeah, so Leopold and Loeb. Richard Loeb was kind of like the Paul character. He was more of like the alpha of the two. He was really good, like classically good looking. He was charming. He was 17 years old and he graduated from the University of Michigan when he was 17. And he was going to be a lawyer.
Oh.
His
Can you imagine having a 17-year-old lawyer? I I know that 17 is not like a child, but I pictured like a 6-year-old in a suit that's too big. Nice to meet ya. With his briefcase and his sleeves are too long and shit. His
sleeves are too long. He's got to roll them up. Yeah. He like walks in and they're like dragging on the floor.
Yeah. That's exactly what I pictured. Sorry. Anyway.
Well, no, I mean, he graduated from the University of Michigan. Then he still had to go to law school. So okay, he would have been like 21.
Oh, okay. Because university, oh, he's an established gentleman.
Yes. Yes. Which 17, I mean, is fucking crazy young to graduate from college.
Yeah.
But his lawyer, his neighbor, Nathan Leopold, was kind of like a goofy looking guy. He wasn't as good, classically good looking as Richard was.
So he's the one with the unibrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was a believer in Nietzsche's concept of the Superman, which is an idea that a person is able to rise above good and evil and just be more than. And so they wanted to commit the perfect crime. They basically wanted to get away with murder. They didn't care so much about the murder itself. They just wanted to get away with the crime.
Okay. So that's interesting. Because Michael Pitt is also in Murder by Numbers, which is about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. This is the second time that he's played a character based on this guy.
Yeah. Okay.
But in their relationship between the two, it's evident in the relationship between Paul and Peter in this movie, where Paul is like the alpha and Peter kind of just like does what he says. But Nathan Leopold would do anything that Richard Loeb would do. Mm-hmm. He would do whatever he wanted him to do in exchange for sexual favors.
Oh, okay.
And what they did was in 1924, this was in Chicago, they lured a 14-year-old boy named Bobby Frank into their car, killed him, and hid his body.
Okay.
Then they sent a ransom note to his parents, to Bobby Frank's parents, and said, "We need $10,000 in exchange for his body." But before dude could pay the ransom, the cops found the body. And the way they were caught was because of a pair of glasses that Nathan Leopold lost. And they were able to trace the glasses back to like an optometrist who had sold them to Nathan. And that's how they got busted. But they did get life in prison. And Richard Loeb died 12 years into his sentence. He was in a prison fight with another inmate and was killed. And after serving 34 years of his sentence, Nathan Leopold was released and just died in 1971.
So he was released on parole?
Uh-huh. After 34 years.
Okay.
Yep. So that is kind of like a loose basis for Paul and Peter. But this movie is so much more than that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very layered.
Yeah. Like Shrek.
Just like an onion.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm sure we'll learn a little bit more about Paul and Peter as we go through the movie. So are you ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
So this opens on a couple driving to their vacation home. Long shots of them like driving through.
Looks like Long Island.
Mm-hmm. And you're hearing them over it's just a voiceover of them.
Yeah.
Talking about opera and hearing opera. And then when we finally cut into the car, you see the family. We've got Naomi Watts and Tim Roth.
Yes.
And their son, Georgie, played by Devin Gearhart. And once we're in the car, we're introduced to this like happy family. And then the title.
Yeah.
Screams on the screen.
I love that part.
Yeah.
They're listening to the opera and then all of a sudden it says Funny Games.
Yeah. And it's just like this screaming death metal with like a woman screaming.
Also, was I mistaken or is there, other than that part, is there only music in this movie when it's being listened to by a character?
Yes.
I don't think there's any other music. Okay. I just was like watching the movie. I'm like, did I miss some music in this movie?
No, you're absolutely right, because this was actually a 1997 Austrian movie from the director Michael Haneke, is how I'm going to pronounce his name because I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce it. But then he remade this version in 2007 for American audiences. And it is a shot for shot remake. And he was kind of loosely going by the rules of this filmmaking movement from 1995. And I'm going to butcher the name of a bunch of things here. Dogme 95, which is the Danish word for dogma. But it's D-O-G-M-E 95.
Okay.
And it was a filmmaking movement created by Lars von Trier. I don't know how to say his name. And Thomas Vinterberg. And Lars von Trier, you might know his work, The House That Jack Built.
Okay. Yeah.
Antichrist.
Yes.
Oh, man. Now I'm blanking. But he's made a lot of very, like, controversial movies. But they had this thing where it was, like, set of rules to, like, quote unquote, purify cinema. And so One of the rules was that sound must never be produced apart from the images or vice versa.
Oh,
which is like music is not meant to be used unless it occurs where the scene is being shot.
Okay.
And so Michael Haneke, I think I kind of bought into some of these like filmmaking rules.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Like he doesn't use music other than the credits. In the movie, unless someone is listening to it.
Yeah. Okay.
But some of the rules of this filmmaking movement are interesting. Shooting must be done on location. Props and sets must not be brought in. So it's like whatever's there is there.
Okay.
If a particular prop is necessary for the story, a location must be chosen that has that prop. The camera must be handheld. The film must be in color. No optical work or filters are allowed. The film must not contain superficial action. No murders, weapons, or anything like that can occur. Temporal and geographical alienation are forbidden. That is to say, the film must take place here and now. Genre movies are not acceptable. The film must be shot on 35mm, and the director must not be credited. So...
he sounds like a pain in the ass.
He does sound like a pain in the ass.
Jeez.
So that was that. That's what they called the Dogme 95. Again, I'm probably butchering that pronunciation. But so anyways, going back to what you said, yes, there is no music in the movie unless it is being played in the scene by a character.
Yeah.
We get our first sighting of the monsters right off the bat, right out of the gate to be...
Literally, right out of the gate,
because they are seen through the gate of the neighbors. They're in the front yard, and you see them, and you see something is like off already.
Oh yeah,
there's these two boys dressed in white, and the neighbors. You just see them from a distance, but you can tell they're acting strange. Even our family, the Farbers, can tell they're acting strange.
Yeah,
and so that is our first sighting. But we don't really know what's going on yet. We just know something is weird.
Yeah.
How cute is Lucky?
How cute is Lucky?
Mm-hmm. Lucky the dog.
Well, he's horribly trained.
Yes.
Which is one thing that I don't like.
But he's cute though, right?
Yeah, he's cute. Golden retrievers, you know, they're cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they need to work on that a little bit.
Well, doesn't matter now. They're all dead.
They're all dead.
Does the dog die.com?
Very much so.
Yes.
Again, off-screen violence to the family.
Yes.
Yes.
Great fake dog, though, that rolls out of the back of that car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so this was, there's like a big, I don't want to say commentary, but a big part of this movie focuses on our consumption as an audience.
Yes.
As an audience, our consumption of violence and like how just like passive we are about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they ask Fred to come over to help launch the boat, and he brings Paul with him. Well, I don't think he wanted to bring Paul with him, but Paul
just
accompanies
kind of follows
him.
Everyone around.
Paul accompanies him, and he just seems like a normal dude right now, like a little rich boy.
Yeah, but like... Michael Pitt is very unique looking.
Yes.
He kind of just looks very mischievous all the time, no matter what.
Yep, for sure.
So that was, he's got good.
A very good distinct casting. Look. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Great casting.
For everybody, yeah.
Yeah. And we cut to Anne, played by Naomi Watts, and she is in the kitchen doing something with meat.
Oh, God. Don't even get me started. Disgusting.
Yeah. So she's doing something with meat. The little kid comes in looking for a knife. He said, Dad needs a sharp knife. And this is where we first see Peter. And I don't know the significance of this, but I know there's something there. The first time you see him, he is behind the screen door.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's so like his face is like blown out with the light because it's just the way the sun's hitting and you can't really see his face. And is that maybe to signify that like these guys could be anyone, like anybody could do this?
Well, sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Sounds
I
wonder good what to me. sounds smart.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I like it.
Let's go with it then.
Let's go with it. Sounds good. This could be anybody.
Yep.
Be careful. Your neighbors are evil.
That's right. So he comes. He's asking for eggs. And he's asking for eggs. He said Fred and Eve want some eggs. And this scene might be the most uncomfortable scene in the whole movie.
It's not even uncomfortable for me. It's frustrating. First of all, I am a patient person, like, waiting in line at the grocery store. I'll wait for 20 fucking minutes in line and just whatever. I'm at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
These people are here too, and they probably don't want to be here either, but I'm just gonna whatever. Right.
Yeah.
I'm patient. I'm not patient with people like this though. Take the fucking eggs and get the fuck out of my house. Oh, you dropped the eggs. I'm sorry. Then you know what? Your bitch ass friend who needs the eggs should probably just go get herself some fucking eggs. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. That would be the end of the movie for me. I would hit him with a fucking golf club first. Get the fuck out of here.
And it's so, it's frustrating and awkward because you see that impatience in her and she wants to just be like, dude, come on.
But she's being too nice.
She's being way too nice.
Yeah.
And
over eggs.
Over eggs. And Peter accidentally drops the phone into the water.
Just gonna put this out there. This family has a vacation home next to a golf course. Where at? Long Island?
Mm-hmm.
And they have one cell phone? I don't think so.
They do have a second cell phone. They have, what's his name's? They have George Farber's cell phone.
Yeah.
Later in the movie, when she's like trying to dry the phone and he's leaning up against the wall, he hasn't sat down yet. She says, where's yours? And he like sighs and he says, like, it's in the fucking car. And my brain is like, well, then just go out and get it.
Yeah.
You know, but later when you see her on the road with cars coming by and things are happening, they must have taken the car.
Yeah. Cause she could have driven it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So he didn't have that. But my question is, this was 2007, right? Landlines were still a thing.
They were. But in your vacation home, you're not going to pay for a landline all year round. Maybe they hadn't, you know what I mean?
I guess.
Maybe they only did it on like a certain month-to-month basis or whatever, and it wasn't up to date or something.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah. That's right.
But she's getting frustrated with Peter, and I think Paul is there at this point, and she tells Georgie, go tell your dad we're eating in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was just like a thing for them to be like, get out of here. We're eating in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Lady did not even start cooking anything.
Right. But at that point, she definitely wanted her husband back in the house. So I'm thinking that if you tell your dad that dinner's almost ready, he's going to come back up here.
Yeah. And then he's going to be pissed when he comes up and dinner's not even cooking yet after he spent all his time.
Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't hit. I'm surprised he didn't slap her.
Jeez. Right.
Not having dinner ready. Jeez.
I don't care if we have guests. It is 5 o'clock.
It is 5 o'clock.
Somewhere.
Old man's supper time.
Old man's supper time.
But he wants to try the club. Paul wants to. We forgot about that part. He wants to try.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. So Paul is there because when she comes out into the hallway, Peter had dropped the eggs again. He said because of the dog. lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now which, Paul is
I'm
there.
I'm not going to lie. I don't doubt it. Lucky's not trained. I'm sure he did jump on him. Just saying.
Paul sees the clubs, the Callaway clubs, which apparently is a good set of golf clubs. And he wants to drive it. He wants to drive it. Take it for a spin, take it for a drive, as they say in the golf biz.
Do they?
I have no idea.
Oh, it's like, that's fun. That's funny. I like that.
And this is important because he takes the golf ball and he goes out and says, oh, it hits great. This is wonderful.
Yes.
And this is where, when he comes back, he starts calling Peter Tom.
Yes.
And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
I know, me
on?
Too. I'm like, do I not know his name? Was this a mistake that somebody somehow missed? What is happening?
Yeah. But he like keeps going, like he keeps like alternating. Like yeah. He'll call him Tom a few times, then he calls him Peter a few times, then he calls him Tom again. And you're just like, what is going on? And they're so polite.
Yep.
It's creepy. And George finally comes up from the boat and he won't listen to his wife.
Yep.
Which bugs me because she's clearly like frantic. And he also just wants to be polite.
Yeah.
And there's right, these guests here. Everyone is just trying to be polite except her.
Yeah. I mean, your wife is obviously uncomfortable. Like your wife's feelings are less important than impressing these people or being nice to these people.
Right.
You know, it's sad.
For sure. And so finally, I forget what sets him off, but George slaps Paul. And so now shit's about to hit the fan because is it Peter that grabs the golf club?
Yes.
Yeah. It's Peter that grabs the golf club and breaks his leg.
Yeah.
Apparently, I didn't think it was that bad until later.
Well, we don't see it, so who knows?
Right.
But I guess drivers are probably pretty sturdy.
You would think.
You know, if you get somebody strong enough. I think that, like, the part that scares me about this is that it's in broad daylight. Just, like, with their door open, just, you know, that's crazy to me.
And this is, I would say, this is our full-on monster reveal. Because we not only do we get the golf club hit, and so you're like, oh shit, these guys aren't fucking around, but also you get the golf ball reveal.
Right.
Yes. When he says, what is this? Oh, it's a golf ball. Then you realize that he never hit the golf ball.
Right.
And so your mind immediately goes to Lucky.
Yeah, he practiced a different way.
Yep. This is so cruel what he's making her do.
Yeah.
What is this game called when it's hot and cold? Is there a name for that game?
Hot and cold.
So he's making her play hot and cold to find the dead dog. And that fake dog that rolls out of that car.
Looks like a real fucking dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it like at first I thought it was when it just like falls out of the onto like the bed of the the trunk the or whatever. The tailgate, but then when it falls off onto the ground, I was like, oh, okay, now it's it's not the real dog. But it looks so good.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, unfortunately, it's a dead dog.
Yeah.
And this is a pivotal scene for us because this is where Paul breaks the fourth wall for the first time.
Right. And again, I forgot about this part. So I wasn't sure if he was looking at me. Or if he was looking at somebody behind, like, the camera.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I didn't know if, like, Peter was back there or something. So I was like, wait, did that just happen?
Casey, like, looks behind her in the living room. Like,
you looking at me, dude? There's nobody behind me. All right, I guess he's looking at me.
Yeah, so now we know we're in for something a little different.
Yeah, because I like his little smirk that he did, too.
Yeah, he has brought us into this world. Just by giving us that look, he's acknowledging that we're there. But this was switched from a wink to a smile. In the original, he kind of smirks at the camera, but he winks.
I would like the wink.
Yeah.
Because the wink would have been a for sure, like, you see that?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I did there?
So we're going to see more of this later on, this fourth wall breaking.
Yeah.
So they hear, Anne hears somebody calling to them. And she goes down to see him and it's her friends showing up on the boat.
Yeah, like, you know you're rich when your friends fucking pass by on their boat. What's up, guys? When did you get here? Oh, my God.
Yeah, what are they just like? Do they just like sail around the thing?
Yeah,
I mean, probably. They could just be out sailing and they just see them. They saw their boat.
I know, but it's like, I mean, boats are expensive.
They are.
They've all got vacation homes and boats, you know?
Oh, yeah. I guess, I mean, they're just not out like... I thought they were just like out, like seeing who's outside.
I mean, maybe. I mean,
could be.
They're probably boring. I mean, yeah, they golf.
Yeah.
All they do is golf. Yeah. They're also fucking into each other's shit.
And so we get a little bit of foreshadowing here when Paul asks Betsy, which dock is yours? The little red one with the thing is, you have a beautiful house.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, what's going to happen with that?
Yeah.
And we're back at the house now. They're moving George to the couch. Everyone is moving. The party is moving into the living room. And we get this speech from Paul about why they are committing these crimes or why Peter is the way that he is.
Yeah.
And we don't really know. He's saying so many different stories. We don't know what is true.
Right.
Right. So we get a number of excuses, I guess, for their behavior.
That he has sex with his mom.
From that to he's white trash to he is, what was another thing?
Drug addicts.
They were drug addicts.
Yeah.
And one time he even says he's jaded and disgusted by the emptiness of existence.
Yeah.
And I took note of that because I feel like that has something to do with this whole thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And I can't, this movie is hard to pinpoint but I know that has a deeper meaning here.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
But here we come to the bet, which is a big part of the movie.
Yeah, I like this part.
Paul bets the Farbers that in 12 hours, by like 8:40 in the morning, they'll all be dead.
Yeah.
And he just makes like the other side of the bet for them. And he says, and you guys bet that you'll still be alive.
Yeah.
And then here's where he breaks the fourth wall for the second time. And now there's no confusion. It is clear that he's talking to us. And he says, who do you think's going to win? Like, I bet you you're on their side and all this stuff. And it's like, Casey's like, no, man.
Nope.
No, you got me all wrong.
I said, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I want it to be you.
But now we are like an active participant in everything that they're doing.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're, you know, in a sense, we're letting it happen.
Yeah.
I know like it's a movie, but.
But then at 1.2, what does he say? Don't forget it's all for entertainment or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't forget the importance of entertainment.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all for us at this point.
Mm-hmm. And so that just puts you. You're no longer just watching it as a movie and you're, like I said, you're an active participant.
You're part of the game.
And the poster for the original Funny Games from 1997 has a child with his head in a bag and on the poster. And this is where we get that in this movie, which Paul calls Cat in the Bag.
Yeah.
And he takes Georgie and he puts a pillowcase over his head. Not to be confused with a potato sack or a knapsack or a burlap sack.
Just a pillowcase.
It's a pillowcase.
Yeah. They're rich. They wouldn't have a potato sack lying around.
That's right. And this scene is so disturbing. Somehow it comes up that they're talking about Anne and they're saying, I bet you she doesn't have any jelly rolls.
Yeah. They want to see her titties.
They're like, they're betting how old she is. They're saying like 35, 37. Naomi Watts was actually 39 at the time of making this movie.
Well, she looks good.
It's so disturbing because Paul makes George tell his wife to take her clothes off. He makes him say it twice. And I just want to like point out the acting in this movie at this point. Everyone's performance is just incredible.
Everyone, yeah.
Right. Tim Roth has come out and said that like filming this movie, like traumatized him in a way.
Yeah.
But so he makes her take her clothes off. She does. They look at her. they make her stand there for a few moments, and then they say, you can put your clothes back on.
Yeah.
Fuck, you did that to her just to fucking do it?
Yeah. They killed her dog and her family, but you know, it's fine.
And during this, this is the reason why Georgie's head is in a sack, is so he doesn't see his mom.
Yeah. How sweet.
But then they also use it as like a...
Of course. I got your son's head in a fucking bag.
Pressure. So. Yeah. But then he pees himself and dude gets disgusted and Georgie's able to push away and run out the door. And then can't even climb the fucking fence.
I know. I'm like, dude.
Like, he got to the top. Then what happened? Why did he give up?
I'm sure that in that situation, I don't care how old you are. Like, you're going to do whatever it takes. And you're filled with adrenaline. So you're not even going to be thinking about like, oh, shit, can't jump 3 feet off of here.
Yeah. He gets to the top and I'm like, dude.
He pisses himself and they get grossed out, right? So if you're ever abducted, just shit yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to escape. You're good. You're golden.
You're good.
Yeah, so since he also can't unlock the door. What kind of home doesn't fucking lock from the inside? What kind of fucking vacation home is this?
Yeah. This happens quite a bit in movies and I don't understand.
Yeah. I'm sure nobody actually does this.
There was one we just watched recently where that happened too. They go to the front door. Oh, it was Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary 2.
Oh, yeah.
When dude is in the house and he's getting chased by Gus and the dog and he can't get out of his own house. And you're like, what the fuck? Just.
Yeah. Yeah. So he can't unlock the door for some reason. So he goes upstairs and sneaks out that way. He goes to the neighbors, right? Oh, yeah. That's right. Because he can't get over the fence. So then he crawls through the back.
Mm-hmm.
Through the water.
Yeah, he goes in the water.
Which is funny because then when he's like walking through the house and he leaves the trail of water, I forgot that he walked through the water. I'm like, man, that kid had a lot of piss in him. Jeez. He really soaked those pants.
That after all of this running and doing all this stuff, he's still like dripping.
Yeah, my man.
But I mean, smart kid to realize that he was dripping the water everywhere and that he's got to shed those wet clothes so that he can. Mm-hmm. But the dude never sits still. That's what pissed me off. As soon as Georgie finds a hiding place, he's there for like 2 seconds and then he goes somewhere else.
His hiding place that was the wall by the fireplace. Yeah, he's so small. He could fit in so many places.
Right.
Also, didn't realize that this is another game. Hide and seek.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But while Georgie is at Fred and Eve's house, we cut back to the Farbers in their home. And George, the dad, says, why don't you just kill us and just get it over with? And this is where we get the line, you shouldn't forget the importance of entertainment.
Right.
And we know that we are a participant in this. So we know that they're doing this for us.
Right.
Which is fucked up.
Which would have been a lot cooler if I saw blood. Just saying.
Jesus.
Just saying.
We never see what happened to Fred and Eve because Georgie sees the dead body in the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
the legs of the dead body. And that we find out later was Jenny. I'm assuming their daughter that he was asking about. He's like, why isn't Jenny going to be here? And blah, 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 blah. So he said, because when he comes back in the house, he said they killed Jenny. And mm-hmm. I said, okay. So we don't know where Fred and Eve are.
Right.
Assuming they're dead, but we don't know.
Right.
And Georgie finds the shotgun. And there's this intense scene with him in the corner where Paul finally finds him and tells him to cock the gun and pull the trigger. And he knows there's no bullets in it. And Georgie just fucking... Good performance by that kid, though.
Yeah, he is.
He was good. And here is where an example of what you were talking about, only playing music during mm-hmm. a scene in the movie. Paul says, let me put on some music. And he puts on that same crazy death metal screaming lady song. So after this, we cut back to the house. Peter is turning on the television. And I'm pretty sure that I saw Putin on that TV screen.
Okay.
But Peter stops on NASCAR.
Yes, the best thing.
The best thing.
The best thing to have on during this really long shot.
Oh my God. But this is where I was kind of thinking, like, when he was going back to telling all those stories about why they're doing it, I was like, could Peter actually be like the
white trash?
The white trash version, because
he's watching NASCAR.
Because he stopped on NASCAR. No offense to NASCAR fans out there, but.
Oh, I'm sure that everyone who listens to the show loves NASCAR.
There is definitely a stereotype that goes along with that. So,
yeah.
Paul returns with Georgie, and this is like, he's like, okay, we got to get moving with this. Let's do eeny, meeny, miny, mo. He picks somebody and then he says, I'm hungry. Basically, good luck, Peter. I'm going to go make a sandwich. I'm going to go get some food. They talk about being hungry a lot in this movie.
Well, yeah.
Which
they
is
don't actually eat anything while they're doing this. 12 right. hours.
And
it kind of shows, I think, in a way, their like sociopathy. Like they obviously don't. They're so disassociated from the what's actually going on. You know, They don't have any emotions about it. So.
Mm-hmm. And Paul goes to make a sandwich and you hear a gunshot. You hear some scuffle. You hear a screaming. Ugh.
I bet y'all didn't think it was the kid.
We cut back to the television. We stay on this shot for a while until we find out that Peter shot Georgie.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the one that they picked, but he said Georgie was trying to run away, so he shot him.
Uh-huh.
And then, oh my God, then they cut to a wide shot of the living room of the whole scene. You see the dead body of Georgie laying on the ground, blood splattered on the wall. You see Naomi Watts just sitting there completely tied up. She's got her legs bound and her hands behind her back. Lots of tape. And we also see the legs of Tim Roth behind the couch. And this scene is a static shot of the living room in the aftermath of their son just being killed. We don't even get to see like her emotion because we're just like, it's all just like facts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We're not like in the emotional bit of it at this point.
Yeah.
This scene goes on for 10 minutes.
Is it really 10 minutes? I knew it was long. And I remember like when it was over, I was like, man, that was all one shot.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I went back and rewound it and it was 10 minutes long. And you really don't get any emotion in it until she gets over to George, The dad, and tries to pick him up. And he just like, he can't even breathe because he's just so like heartbroken at what just happened. Her breakdown comes a little bit later.
Yeah.
But she has to like force him to breathe. And it's just so intense. And oh my God. But 10 minutes to stay on that shot. And that goes back to show how good the acting is in this too.
Yes.
But just to like keep that going throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. To stay completely in it for 10 minutes.
So they finally get out of the room and he says, she turns the phone on and she says, it's working. And he says, call someone. And she says, who? Let's think about this for a little bit. Anne.
It's not.
Who are you going to call?
It's not 922.
No, not 922. It's not 411.
Not 411. Although you can get some information from them.
That's true.
911? I think it's 911.
I think so. She should try that number.
Yeah, she should have called 911.
But she can't get through. The phone is still not working. And there's an extended scene, again, of her trying to fix the phone. But she goes to shut the door of the living room. And that's when she kind of loses her shit a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And she vomits.
Yep.
And, oh, man. Heartbreaking.
And Anne decides to go. She goes out through the window because can't get through the front door.
But yeah. What? I don't get it.
I don't know why that was even. It wasn't even necessary to this movie, though, either.
to have the door locked?
Yeah, because what's his name gets out anyway and doesn't go through the front and just goes through the back way. You know what I mean? So he still got out, and then she just gets out through the window. There's no.
Yeah.
Could have just let them have a normal door.
Right. Right before Anne leaves, George asks Anne to forgive him.
Yeah, because he fucked up.
He did fuck up. And shit went down.
Well, yes, of course he did fuck up. But even if he would have tried to put his foot down and be rude and make them leave, they still weren't going to leave. You know.
Yeah.
He would have just gotten hit with the golf club 2 minutes earlier.
Right, right. So when Anne gets out to the street, she is very clever. She sees a car coming, and she doesn't immediately jump out and say, hey, help, because she thinks it might be them.
Yeah.
So she gets behind the tree, but then she can't get the van's attention. Mm-hmm. And so when the next one pulls up, she sees car headlights again. She's like, fuck.
Yeah.
I got to do something. And
got to try.
That was the wrong move, Anne. I'm sorry.
wrong move. You lose. You lose the game.
George makes his way back into the living room to cover up the body of his son. And he hears the door open and he calls for Anne. He says, Anne, is that you? And then we get that creepy fucking golf ball rolling into frame. And you see it on his face. He's just like,
the golfers are back.
The golfers are back. Damn it. I miss tea time.
Damn it.
So the golfers return and they have golfers return and they have Anne tied up again. God. Yeah.
I mean, he told them that they were going to lose no matter what.
She's like begging for them to stop, whatever. And Paul breaks the fourth wall again and asks us if we want to keep playing. Oh, man. And he says, you want to keep playing, right? You want to see an end with plausible plot development. And you're just like, I Paul, can't do this anymore, Paul.
I wish you would have just blown the family away.
Yep. I don't want to play anymore. I should have just turned it off. and here he's playing another game where she has to recite a prayer.
Yes.
And she doesn't know any prayers.
Oh, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Now say it backwards.
Oh, I could if I thought about it, I bet.
Yeah. But that's what he makes her do. They finally give her a prayer and she says it. And then he says, okay, well, you got to say it backwards. And all of this is for her to just decide if she can do this, then she can decide what murder weapon they kill her husband with.
Yeah, that's fucked.
It is fucked.
That is fucked.
Before she starts to meet up with his demands, she grabs the gun sitting on the table and she just blows Peter away.
She does. He hits the wall, doesn't he?
Yeah. He like flies up and hits the wall.
Yeah.
And you are like so happy.
Well, you are so happy.
Yes. You're so happy for her and you're like, okay, we're going in the right direction here.
This isn't what I was promised. No. Mm-mm. No.
Well, you're in luck.
Paul told me that he was going to kill that whole family.
Yeah. And so you're in luck because Paul searches frantically for the remote control.
Yeah.
And at first you're thinking, what in the world? Why does he want the TV remote?
He wants to put NASCAR back on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Peter has been shot. So in his memory, he wants to put NASCAR back on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To honor him.
To honor him. That's right.
But he literally rewinds the movie.
Our movie.
Our movie.
Funny Games.
He rewinds our movie, which we are watching, and takes back everything that just happened. Goes back to before. This is like Spaceballs.
I've never seen it. Remember?
Oh, man.
What the hell am I looking at? When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now, now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
And this is where we're kind of like, oh, shit. There's no winning. Like, there is no hope for them. because yeah. Paul's just in control.
Yeah.
Part of it is like, maybe that's why he's not worried about anything.
Yeah.
Because he's controlling it. So, you know, he's like, whatever is going to happen. But once he rewinds the movie, he grabs the gun before Anne can and he shoots George.
So if he shot George, then realistically, he should have killed her with the knife.
Why?
Because he was trying to make her choose between the knife and the gun.
Uh-huh.
And if she wanted to be a smart ass about it and not play the game, then she gave her he gave her husband the easy way out. She was left with the knife.
Well, I think her fate was bad enough because they take her out onto the boat. She's tied up. She's got tape across her mouth.
Yep.
And this is where the knife comes back into play from the beginning, where it was on the boat and she's trying to cut herself free. And they
I love it when she starts trying to cut her ties, though, because they're just like, oh, man, like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's not going to matter. They just like kind of let her do it for a minute.
Uh-huh. They've got her sitting on the boat and Paul asked what time it is. And Peter said it's like 8 o'clock. So really she has until like 8:40, but he just pushes her off and she goes into the water and that's the end of Anne.
That's the end of the Farbers.
Even Peter says, well, she had another hour. And Paul, going back to our thing where they're always eating, he says, I'm getting kind of hungry.
Yeah.
And it's just,
Well, then they had to go get more eggs.
They had to go get more eggs. So they go to the Red Dock. They go into Betsy's house in the morning. And Paul says, Anne asked me to come get some eggs. And you're just like, oh, my God. And Paul comes right up to the fucking camera and looks at us one last time before it freezes. The title pops back up again. And we get the fucking crazy screaming death metal lady.
Death metal lady.
And that is it. And we are left fucking
elated.
Casey.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Honesty is
the best policy.
The best policy. Yeah.
Yep. Honest Abe.
You can't just help but just stare at the screen and being like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah.
And so when they first go out onto the boat with Anne, they are having a conversation about communicating between the material world and the anti-material world and being stuck in a black hole where there's like no communication. And finally, when this character that they're mentioning, Kelvin, overcomes the gravitational forces of this black hole, it turns out that one universe is real and the other is fake. Mm-hmm. And so this is clearly all about what we're experiencing right now. And that's it. That's Not So Funny Games.
Funny Games.
Well, let's for a second, let's talk about our favorite reveals.
Yeah, that's normally how the show goes.
Yeah. So my favorite reveal is it takes place later, like 3/4 of the way into the movie. It's the golf ball.
When it rolls in?
When they just capture Anne and George is looking. He says, Anne, is that you? And you just see the golf ball. Like you hear it bounce and then it rolls.
Yeah. Mine's the other golf ball.
The first one.
Yeah.
Where he pulls the golf ball out of his pocket.
When he shows that he still has it because he just killed their dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, now it's time for a segment that I like to call The Real Monster.
Run, run, run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the gingerbread man.
You're a monster.
I'm not the monster here. You are. You and the rest of that fairy tale trash poisoning my perfect world. Now tell me, where are the others?
Eat me.
Let's say our real monsters at the same time.
Okay.
On three, because I only have one real monster, and I think I know what yours is.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to go 1, 2, 3, and then say our real monster.
Okay.
1, 2, 3. Cross-contamination. Anne, you have to be more conscious in the kitchen.
No, you know what? If they didn't kill her, that fucking raw meat would have.
Mm-hmm. She touched the phone. She touched The other counter she
the knife that she gave to her
the
kid.
The knife that she gave to her kid.
Now, granted, it was steak, so it's really not a huge deal. But what's to say if she's doing it with beef, she gonna do it with chicken.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, imagine if she was making chicken breast and she had poultry all over her fucking hands.
Disgusting.
Ew. And did she wash the lettuce after?
No, that was before.
That was before. Okay, thank God.
That was before. Otherwise, we'd have a big problem. Bigger problem. I also have just the farmers in general, because, again, they didn't train their fucking dog.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I watched this with Sam. Shout out to Sam. While we were watching the movie, they were showing one of the scenes from the living room. And he said, "That's the real monster right there." And I said, "What?" And he said, "That picture, that's the same picture that's hung on the wall four times." I'm like, oh.
Good call, Sam. Good call.
So the interior decorating also of their fancy ass vacation home that only locks from the outside.
Yes. Yes. That might be our winner. Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else to add about Funny Games?
No.
No. Okay. Mm-mm. Well, listeners out there, if you have seen this movie, I'm hoping you have seen this movie because you just sat through the whole episode. But if you have thoughts about this movie, we want to hear them. Tweet us at I Met Your Monster or send us a email at Zach at How I Met Your Monster. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at How I Met Your Monster. Casey, where can our listeners find you on social media?
I am on Instagram at WolfMotherCasey.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Make sure to check out our website, howimetyourmonster.com. You can listen to past episodes of the show and even do some more stuff. Find out.
You can do all kinds of stuff.
Just visit.
It's a funny game. Go check it out.
Make sure to join us next week because Casey, Danny, and I will be discussing Angel Heart, starring Mickey Rourke and Robert De Niro and Lisa Bonet. It's so good. Oh, my God.
I am excited about it. You know why.
Yeah, and I don't think Danny's ever seen it either.
Oh, really?
I think that's what he said. So you guys are in for a treat. And listeners out there, you're in for a treat as well. So make sure to watch Angel Heart before next Monday so you can follow along. And as always, thank you all for listening. Now go meet some monsters.